Dark Wreath Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. Autumn Semester 2009, this is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 7. Lecture 17, delivered on October 15, 2009. The title of this lecture is Internal Rate of Return, Bond Price, and Bond Yield.
Today, internal rate of return, bond price, and bond yield. In this lecture, we will go back through the idea of net present value. But here we are using this concept so that we can go forward from there to talk about some ideas related to net present value. Let me give you some a cash flow problem. And here we go. You're going to put $3,500 into a project right now. Okay, and here is your cash flow. Year one. Really? I can't even remember long enough to walk over here. $1,200. And then in year two, $1,600. Year three, $1,000 comes in. And year four, $400. There's no salvage value. Now, if there is salvage value, it is so easy to deal with. You just tack that on to the last year's cash flow. Okay, so if I said this project had a salvage value at the end of its life of $100, well, you just make year four, instead of $400, $500. That's all you ever do for salvage value. Don't sweat that. In fact, interestingly enough, salvage value comes back in a weird way just in a few minutes in this course. But right now, in this class today. But right now, let's just crank through this, and we're going to do a net present value. But, of course, to do a net present value, we'll have to have a discount rate. So let us use a discount rate of 9%. So we're going to do the net present value at 9% of this mess, which would, you can just hammer this out. It's quite easy to beat one of these problems out. It would just be the negative $3,500 plus $1,200 times 1 plus 0.09 to the negative first plus 1,600 times 1 plus 0.09 to the negative second, plus 1,000 times 1 plus 0.09 to the negative third, plus 400 times 1 plus 0.09 to the negative fourth power. Now, if you don't want to do it that way, if you are afraid you'll make a mistake doing it that way, here's what I would like you to do is to break out that Texas Instruments TI-83 plus, or TI-84, if you're really cool, which you aren't. And I want you to turn the calculator on. Now, the reason I say that is because I've punched keys for a while before I thought about turning the calculator on, and then notice I had a blank screen, and I thought, you know, really? Turn on the calculator. Now, hit the apps button, and you'll see finance. So, hit enter and open up finance. Now, I want you to walk down that calculator cursor down just below the first screen. You're going to see NPV and IRR. Functions. I don't know which one comes first, NPV or IRR. NPV. Okay, hit NPV. Just hit open that one up. Make sure you're all on the same page. You got that open, and you should be back on the main screen with the NPV function ready for you to start with. You'll see NPV, and then it will open parentheses for you. Now, with NPV open, what you want to do is key in your discount rate first. And in this case, your discount rate will be 10. Now put a comma. There's a comma key right there on the front of the on the keypad. Comma. And then key in negative $3,500. Oh, I'm sorry, 9. I'm just testing your ass. I wanted to see if you were watching me. That's good. That's good. Don't drink as much coffee as I do. It makes you really jittery in your brain. Okay, 9, comma, negative 3,500. And then put a comma. Now, use the second key and open those braces that are yellow. There, do you see the braces? They're in yellow. Just hit the yellow key. It's not the parentheses. Is it above the parentheses?
Yeah.
Okay, open the brace, and now just honk in, one after the other, your cash flows. 1,200, comma, 1,600, comma, 1,000, comma, 400. Now make sure that these are in order of years. If there were a year like year 3, there was a 0, and then years 4 and 5 was the 1,400. You'd have to put that in there so the calculator would know that there was that the 1,000 came in year 4 and the 400 came in year 5. You have to hold place year by year. Now once you've done put in those in that order, close your braces and then close a parenthesis and hit enter. What do you get?
3.16.
3.15, right? Or 3.16? It rounds up. You're right. Does it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is anyone getting it so it rounds down? Okay. Well, my calculator must suck. Okay, fine, whatever. I got 3.15, but then again, I was using another kind of calculator for it. But okay, that is the same answer, $3.16, that you would have gotten doing it by the formula. Now talk to me, which one is easier? Duh. Yeah. Once you get the hang of the NPV trick, I mean, with the calculator, it just smokes. Now, on the HP, the way you would pound, do you know how to do it on the HP? No, but if you hum a few bars. Okay, it's actually really easy on the HP. You know how to clear your registers on it. Just clear. Ooh, you got the silver edition? What the heck? You need to set your keys. Gow. Stupid. Okay. Okay, clear that, okay? Now, you always clear your registers before you start. Now, key in your 9i. Now, I want you to put in 3,500 change sign, and then GCF0. Now, through the grinder, just put in your 1,200. Put in 1,200, then GCFJ, and then the next one, 1,600, G, CFJ, 1,000, G, CFJ, and then 400, G, CFJ. And now, just hit F, NPV.
There you go.
Oh, God. We got to find it. We'll do a fundraiser so you can get a calc. 86. It's funny. Unfortunately, I teach math, as some of you know, and we still have 86s around. People ask about them, and I used one. Of course, then again, I used a slide rule a long time ago too. The 86. I don't think has a finance. Well, I'm going to have to look to see if the 86 actually has finance functions on it. It might. But the truth of the matter is, though, that whatever calculator you're using, The reason I show you the formulas, I don't talk about the calculators at first, is just so you can suffer and appreciate just how incredible these calculators are that do these amazing things these days. What kind you got? Did you get it?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'll ask you.
It's on the BA2, because these podcasts are listened to by people all over the world, so I have to say, you know, well, what about the BA2? Someone's going to send me an email. Who are you? Why are you bothering me? Because I listen to your podcast from Saudi Arabia. Okay, look, all you do is, first of all, clear your time value of money. You know how to do clear time value? Okay, we got to start. Well, let's see here. Okay. Stupid small print. Okay. Second, clear time value of money. Okay, now, here's what we're going to do. The first thing you're going to do is you're going to start pumping in your cash flows on this thing. First things first, I want you to hit the CF button. See it? Okay, now key in 3500 POSNEG. Okay, now. And that was in C0, right? Okay, hit enter. Be sure to hit enter. Now push the down arrow key there at the top, and you should see C1. So I want you to key in 1200. Okay, hit enter. Don't ever forget not to hit enter. Now hit the down arrow and you'll see something funkadelic, an F1. Is that what you see? Ignore it. As long as it's 1, you're fine. Just push down again and you'll see CF2. Key in 1600. Okay? Hit enter. Don't ever forget to hit enter because it will go pig face blank on you when you ask for an answer. Now go key down. You'll see F1, that F thing again. Just make sure it's 1 and walk down. Okay, no, that. Okay, you got them all in?
Yeah.
Okay, now, I want you to hit NPV. What do you see? You should see an I.
Yep.
Okay, hit 9. Okay, enter. Compute.
That's the CPT button, right?
Yes.
It's not doing anything.
Give it to me. That actually sucks. There. Yeah, oh, that's right. Down. That's right. Down. There. Yeah. Hit down and it'll tell you the net present value. Okay? Plenty good. Yes. Okay. And you can do net present values all day long. Large cash flows. And to be blunt about this, I don't know too many people who do it with the formula anymore. It's just so fast to do it this way, but it is worthwhile. Now that you know how to do this with whichever calculator you're using, what I would like you to do is, let's say, well, where did you get that 9% from? Well, to be honest, I pulled it out of my ass. But we see that at 9%, we have a positive net present value project. Therefore, this project is a go. We're going to do this project. So let me take all this off here just quickly. And I'm going to say, okay, the NPV at 9% for this particular problem came out to be $3.15. This project was a go. Now, I'm going to just right over here draw just a little XY axis with the horizontal axis being interest rate, R. And I'll go from 1% to 3, 4, 5%, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10%, 11, go out a little ways there. And just on the vertical axis, I'm going to put NPV. And I'm not going to scale that axis, but I do know that at 9%, this project was slightly positive. So I'm in the first quadrant somewhat. Now, with the help of your friendly calculator, humor me, do the NPV at 10%. And as you do that, with a TI, of course, you would go apps, finance, go down, hit NPV.
Just hit the second enter and then change the 9 to a 10.
You can't. Oh, that's right. That's right. You can edit. You edit the formula. That's right. I always do it the hard way. I just go back through and hammer it out. Second, which key is it? What is it?
Second enter,
and that'll bring it back up so you can edit the function, the keystrokes. And then just replace that 9 with a 10%. And what do you get? Negative $62 and what?
26
cents. So when I go out here to 10% in this little axis, this grid setup I did, we see that the NPV is down in that quadrant. So I can pretty much assess that whatever that net present value function looks like for this particular cash flow problem, it's got this behavior. It definitely crosses the R-axis somewhere between 9 and 10%, closer to 9%. That place where it crosses right there, that is called the internal rate of return of the project. It is the discount rate at which the project has an NPV of zero. That crossing there, that's called the internal rate of return. Now, you might remember from your dark days of algebra or calculus. Well, let me ask, do you remember what was called where a function crosses the x-axis? It was called the root of the function. Remember, find the roots of a quadratic, using quadratic formula, plus or minus negative b plus or minus square root of b squared minus 4ac all over 2a and all that. Well, that's a root. Mathematically, the internal rate of return is the root of the internal rate of return of the NPV function. That's all you're finding there. Now, why would this be important, the internal rate of return? Because once I have found it, then you can throw a discount rate at me and I can say up or down right away. So, if I had this cash flow pattern, negative 3,500 out the door at the beginning, and then you had this cash inflow pattern, and then someone said, well, is this a go or no go? I say, what's your discount rate? You say 8%, I'd say it's a go. Later he said, I made a mistake. It's actually 12%, I say it's a no go. How do you know that? Because the internal rate of return is 9.05%. Oh, you know that. So, yeah, any discount rate I would use that would be below the internal rate of return, I'd have a positive NPV project. Any discount rate they'd throw at me that was above the internal rate of return, I'd have a negative NPV project. The NPV is downward sloping. In calculus terms, you would say that the derivative of net present value with respect to interest is a negative function. It's just that's the fancy way of doing it. You can write that down and put it on your refrigerator, and people will really be impressed when they come over. They might even leave, not raid your refrigerator if they saw that on there. Now, so this internal rate of return essentially is like our hurdle. Once I know what the internal rate of return is, I know that when someone comes to me and talks about a discount rate, I've got, well, you said 12%. Yeah, that's above the hurdle. You're not going to get it. You can't have it at that rate. So now comes the part, well, how would we find that internal rate of return mathematically? Well, mathematically, we would find it by saying, well, we know how this works. NPV of the project equal that cash flow stream that I wrote there the first time. And so I would say, well, it would be the interest rate where the net present value is zero of negative $3,500 plus $1,200 times 1 plus R to the negative first plus $1,600 times 1 plus R to the negative second plus 1,000 times 1 plus R to the negative third plus 400 times 1 plus r to the negative 4th. Well, here's the thing. You can't solve for that r. Mathematically, algebraically, can't do it. Nope. There is, in mathematical terms, we would say there is no closed form solution. How did we do it in the old days before there were calculators? We just went back and forth. Well, when we put it in at 9% and do the formula, we get a positive value. So we put it in at 10%, we get a negative value. So it must be between 9 and 10, closer to 9. So now we'll try 9.2. Oh, it's negative there, so we'll try 9.1. It's negative there. So we'll try 9.03. It's positive there. You just kept doing the formula back and forth until you got to some level of accuracy that you wanted at 0. So we usually stop when we got 0.00. When we put in an R, we'd say that was R. That was the internal rate of return. That is a pain in the butt to do it that way. But that's basically how we used to do it back in the old days, back when we had Stone Age tools. Now, you can do it the easy way. You take your calculator, you whip that calculator out, and you go to your apps, finance, go down this time on the TI to the IRR and hit IRR, and up will pop IRR with an open parenthesis into the main window again. Make sure you're with me. I want you to do this, because once you do this, it's a joke. What used to make us literally cry trying to get these answers, yeah, now it's just like all you have to do is key in stuff. Here, with the internal rate of return function, you don't put in an interest rate. That's what you're trying to find, is an interest rate. So you pump in negative $3,500 and you put a comma. And then you open up the braces and you push in your cash flow, $1,200, your positive cash flow, comma, $1,600, comma, $1,000, comma, $400, close the braces, close the parentheses, and then hit enter. And what does it tell you? Which is 9.05. Yeah. That fast. It makes it look like it's easy. It's not easy. For a calculator it is, because a calculator doesn't have anything else to do with its life except be a calculator. You know, go ahead.
With the IRR, should you always round down? Since if you round up, then you could still be taking a number that's going to, in the long run, get you a negative.
To two decimal places, you're talking about it won't matter. To two decimal places, that's all you need. Round to two decimal places. In other words, if the third decimal place is more than a 5 or more, round up on that second digit, round down if it's 4 or less. Yeah. At that point, you're in accuracy that is fine for any calculation you would need in a real-world situation. I ought to be careful about that. If you're dealing in lots of money, you'd probably want it to be, you would carry out, you would say, well, the internal rate of return is 9.05. But for any calculation you would do with that IRR, you'd carry all the digits that thing had given you. Okay? Really. So the number that I'm writing here, 9.05, is an information product for a certain constituent audience who doesn't need anything more than that. If it were an information constituency that needed more than that, they'd need a lot more than that, and you give them the whole nine yards, okay? But that's how you find internal rates of return. It's just easy. It's really an easy thing to do. I mean, I'm just going to give you, on the quiz that I'll give you, the take-home quiz that you'll find on my website Saturday night, I'll just give you some cash flows, just let you do do some practice with this stuff. It's really easy to do. Once you get the hang of it, it's sure as hell a lot easier than it was in the old days. But now let me switch gears here for just a second, just for a while, to a certain kind of cash flow pattern that is constructed by a very specific kind of contract. And you remember back in the earlier days of this course, back when we were all young, we were all happy together, I talked about debt instruments, the bills, the notes, the bonds. Well, here now we're going to get down to the specifics. We call them bonds. And we're going to deal with corporate and government bonds. Consumer bonds work a little bit differently. In other words, when you borrow money for a house or a car, you are issuing a kind of bond that is different from the ones in the corporate and government world. So we're going to cabin this for the time being in the corporate and government world. And later, we'll talk about the ones in the regular world. Here's the deal. In the consumer bond, in consumer bonds, the ones that you will issue in your life as borrowers for homes, cars, and things like that, the payment pattern is set up so that you are servicing the debt and amortizing it at the same time. Throughout the life of the loan, you are servicing the debt, paying interest on what you owe, and amortizing the debt, paying down what you owe. That's how consumer bonds work. So that at the end of the loan, you're done. You've paid it off. Corporate and government bonds don't work that way. Corporate and government bonds service the debt through its life and then at maturity amortize it all at once. So along the way, all a government or corporate bond will do is pay you interest. And then at the end, you'll get one last interest check, and then you'll get your money back, whatever the agreed upon amount was. Now, we have to say, well, what is it you're going to get back? Do you remember what it is you get back? How much you get back? What is it? Money. I want the money. Show me the money. What is it? How much money? $1,000. Yeah, that's the face. $1,000. Unless I say differently, it's going to be a $1,000 face on the bond. Now, you'll hear me sometimes slip into the quoting way, which is always a tenth. And I think I did that on that first exam. I actually quoted a bond or a bill at a tenth. So if you hear me say 100, you know I mean 1,000. I hope you do. But it's $1,000. You'll get back $1,000. So right here on the board, one bond, and we'll say, we'll take my initials, ABC, as the corporation. And we're going to pay a 7.5 ABC 22. And I'll give you the more specific, exact way we describe these in a later lecture. But for right now, this is good enough. This is saying that there is a 7.5% coupon, and this bond matures in 2022. So that means there are 13 years left on this bond. You could have been the original buyer of it during the issue, or you could have bought it in the secondary market. But you are now the bearer of this bond. You are the bearer, which means that you will get $75 every year. And then in 2022, you will get one last $75 check, and you'll get a $1,000 check. So, again, the coupon will service the debt. You're going to get paid to hold on. And then at the end, you'll get your money back for it. So, if I were to say the price of this bond, what's this bond worth? The price of the bond would be governed like this. The price of the bond would be nothing but the present value of $75, which would of an annuity of $75, one minus 1 plus r to the negative 13th all over r. That would be the present value of the annuity, the $75 level annuity you would get for 13 years. And then there would also be this kicker on the hind end of the thing, a kicker on the hind end of the thing of $1,000 13 years out. So its present value would be 1,000 times 1 plus r to the negative 13th. See how that looks like a salvage value? It actually is it's the same thing as a salvage value on the bond. Where you say, well, wait a minute here, Sparky. Don't call me Sparky. Okay, fine. Surely you meant to put 0.075 in for the r. And the first thing I'd say to you is, don't call me Shirley either. No, I didn't. I did not mean to put that in there. Because just because the bond was issued at 7.5% doesn't mean that's the prevailing rate for the risk of this bond now. Now, the corporation that issued the bond probably put that coupon at the time where it believed the proper interest rate would be. It tried to get it as close as it could. But since then, interest rates could have floated up, they could have floated down, they could have fluctuated, they could have trended. And the truth of the matter is, right now, interest rates are going to start trending upward rather severely here in the next 6 months. So corporate bonds issued at 7.5% coupon, oh, those are going to be paying crap compared to what the interest rates will be within a year. So, well, we'll say, okay, let's do some calculations here on this. And we can do some present values of annuities and all of that kind of stuff. And there's a bond calculation function there in your calculator as well. You can do a TMV on the TI calculators. Now, here's something. In the fancy, complicated versions of these, I'd give you a date on which we are pricing it, a date of maturity, so you'd have fractions of years and all that kind of stuff you'd be playing with. We can do that later. It just is an unnecessary complication for the underlying point that I'm trying to get to here. If I were to just say, okay, let's say the price of this bond let me put in 7%. Let me put in the 7%. Now, in order to do this on your calculator, if you were a calculator-oriented kind of person, what you would want to do is go into apps. Well, there's actually a couple of ways. I do it kind of a cheap way in the apps. Apps Finance, Time Value of Money, TMV. And now what you want to do is, we've got a 13-year instrument. Do you see, you'll get a panel of parameters comes up. Okay, now you put in, do you see it? The TM, time value of money thing? Okay, now you've got a panel that starts with N and then I and all that kind of stuff, right? Okay, here's how we're going to crank it. What I want you to do, first of all, is put in 13 for N. It should be the one at the top.
TVM solver?
Yeah, I'm sorry, TVM solver. I'm not thinking. I'm doing this blindfolded because I don't have one of the calculators in front of me. I apologize for that. Okay, put in TM, and you'll have N, key in 13, go down, I, put in 7, then go down. What's the next one on there?
NPV.
What? No, present value, you're going to put a zero in there for now. Just put a placeholder in there for now, okay? Okay, now go down. What's the next one on it? Would be payment, PMT, put in $75. Negative 75. Negative 75. It's weird with these. You either put one negative and the other positive. Okay, now You should have a future value comes next, FV, negative 1,000, because that's the kicker at the end. That's your sweetener at the end. Okay? Now, leave those other two stupid keys alone. Don't touch those. God will hate you if you touch those. Okay? Go back up there to that that PV thing, okay? To the present value. And put a zero in there. I want you to put a zero. Did you have a zero in there? Okay, now, second, I think it's answer. Nope. Huh? If I just go down again, it'll solve it?
If you go down, it's either end or beginning. You want it on the ending, right?
Yeah, you want it on the end. I see something. I've got to have to look at one. I'm losing my mojo here trying to remember. What the hell? I can't even read the... Huh? Yeah, that's what I want. I can't remember where the solve key is.
Enter?
Oh, alpha... Oh, it's the alpha. Duh. My ass. What went wrong there? Oh, yeah, I'm on the payment keys. For the love of God. Present value. Enter. Second. Enter. Alpha. Enter. My ass. Oh, you didn't put in the negative. You did that just so I'd be losing. Damn, it's hot in this place. Zero. Okay, now. Second. Alpha, enter. There it is. Grr. Did you get 1,041 after you'd fooled around listening to me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you get it back up there to the PV, and then you just hit alpha and hit the enter key. Yeah. Because I'm just discounting the cash flow at 7%. See, I'm just saying, okay, if we discount cash flows from this corporation at 7%, what's the value of a bond that's paying us 7.5%? Okay? And you get, what is it, about 1,041 bucks? 1,041, what was the pennies? 79? Okay. Now, let's go down here and find the price at 8%. Which means that once you've got everything else in, you should be able to just go up there and change that to an 8, go back down to the PV and hit alpha, enter again. Yeah. Oh, you can bite me on this one. There is.
It's too tough.
No, it's not. Here. Watch. Okay. Second clear time value of money. 13N. Interest rate is 7. The payments are 75 negative. Future value 1,000 negative. Compute present value. My ass. There it is. I thought I couldn't see that at first. You see, you just key it in just like. What do you get for a present, the price at 8%? 960.48. Look, when the discount rate was below the price of the bond, or the coupon rate, the bond sold at a premium to par. The bond sold at a premium to par. If the discount rate was higher, well, think about it. Look. This company's paying 7.5% interest. The market at 7% is saying, you should have paid us only 7%. So we're going to make these more valuable than par. I'm seeking some terminology in there on you, par. Well, and then at 8%, the bond sells at a discount to par. Why? Because the bond is paying a 7.5% coupon. The market wants 8%, so the market's going to say, you suck. Well, they won't say that. They're dignified. They might. Oh, but so in a way, just think of it logically. The company's paying 7.5%. If the market says you should pay us only 7%, well, they're going to reward this bond by pushing it at a premium to par. But, ow, I wish I'd quit doing that. 8%, if the market says you should be paying 8%, you're paying only 7.5%, bite me. We're going to drop the bond price below par. Now, one last thing. Put that same thing in. Just go up there and change the interest rate to 7.5%. See what happens. It sells at par. It sells at exactly what it's worth. You're going to, it paying you 7.5%, you should have gotten 7.5%. So the present value of that $1,000 out there 13 years from now comes back to you at exactly par. Because the debt is being serviced exactly as it should. Last thing, yield. You see, because in the real world, financial instruments are priced. You can go to the paper and you won't see a discount rate for a bond. You'll see its coupon. You'll see the terms of the bond if you look. But you'll see the price the market is giving to the bond. So in the real world, we know the price. We know. Let us say that this real life bond out there is right now priced at $980. So we know that $980 is the present value of the level annuity of $75 a year, discounted at some interest rate, plus $1,000 at year 13, discounted at that some interest rate. We don't know what that interest rate is. That's what we call the yield to maturity. That's the yield on the bond. The price is the mechanism, but the yield is what is implied from the price. When you look in the newspaper, you'll see prices. And so we have to work backward. And again, there's no algebraic solution for this. You literally would have to just keep trying different R's until you got this present value of the annuity stream plus the lump sum to equal the price on the other side. You just keep playing back and forth. It was a pain in the gluteus maximus to do that. But now you've got it. On your calculator, just simply put in the present value, $980, and go up there to the I and just say second or alpha, enter. Survey says 7.75. 7.75. Really? Why are my answers a little different on mine? Okay, fine. Okay. So the yield to maturity on this bond is 7.75%. If the bond's price is $980, the yield to maturity. Now, one quick reality check. Was this bond selling at a premium or a discount to par? Talk to me. It's selling at a discount to par. You see, it's selling at $980. It's at a discount to par. That means that was the coupon too much or too little? Too little. The markets are saying you suck at 7.5% coupon. We're going to drop your price. Investors are just going to back off. Demand will back off. Price will slide down. So that means that the yield to maturity will have to be above 7.5. And, yep, it's at about 7.75. So that gives you a quick way to check that, yeah, it was selling at a $20 discount to par, and that meant that the yield was about 0.25% higher than the coupon, about. It'll be different for every cash flow problem you do. That's how you do bond prices. That's how you do bond yields. You're almost ready to be investment advisors now. So that's all I have for you today. I thank you.